Translation: the city superintendent of police, the serpent, saw that the citizens were being attacked by Kalakanya, and he became very aggrieved to see his own residence set ablaze after being attacked by the Yavanas. Purport: the living entity is covered by two different types of bodies, the gross body and the subtle body. At death we can see that the gross body is finished, but actually the living entity is carried by the subtle body to another gross body. The so-called scientists of the modern age cannot see how the subtle body is working in carrying the soul from one body to another. The subtle body has been figuratively described as a serpent or the city's police superintendent. When there is fire everywhere, the police superintendent cannot escape either. When there is security and an absence of fire in the city, the police superintendent can impose his authority upon the citizens. But when there is an all-out attack on the city, he is rendered useless. As the life air was ready to leave the gross body, the subtle body also began to experience pain. Vande ham Shri Guru Shri Tathpada Kamalam Shri Gurun Vaishnavamsta Shri Rupam Sarvajatam Sahagana Raghunatam Vitam Tam Sajivam Sadvaitam Savadhutam Parijana Sahitam Krishna Chaitanya Devam Shri Radha Krishna Padan Sahagana Lalita Shri Vishakhan Vitamascha. Srila Prabhupada states in this purport, the so-called scientists of the modern age cannot see how the subtle body is working and carrying the soul from one body to another. This echoes a statement of Sri Krishna in Bhagavad Gita. Can anyone think of that verse? Anyone? Udkramantang stitang vapi bhunjanam vagunam vitam vimura nanu paschanti paschanti jnana chakshushaha. In the 15th chapter also, as well as in the 2nd chapter extensively, Lord Krishna describes the soul. In the 15th chapter he describes it in more detail, how the actually, this whole story of Puranjan is partly an expansion of those three verses in the 15th chapter, in which Lord Krishna describes Manashashtani, well, that's prior to that, Manashashtani Indriyani Prakriti Sthani Karshati. All living beings, the beginning of that verse is also very well known, that all the jivas are parts and parcels of Krishna. Mamai Vangsho Jiva Loke Jiva Bhuta Sanatanaha. All jivas are parts and parcels, as Srila Prabhupada translates this, of Krishna, eternal parts and parcels of Krishna. But they're struggling with immaterial nature, with the senses centered on the mind. And then Krishna goes on to explain how every living being in every species of life has certain faculties, sensual faculties. Shrotram chakshus parshanam cha rasanam gharanam eva cha adhishtanam manaschayam visayanupasevati. So the senses, by seeing, hearing, touching, smelling, tasting, feeling, the living being in the material world enjoys himself or serves his sense of sense enjoyment. Of course, not in every species does a living being have all the senses active. For instance, bats are blind. But generally, that's a very condemned species, the bat. It's not a high birth by any means. But generally in the higher forms of life, including the higher forms of life among the lower forms, that means the animals like cows, monkeys and lions, They are in a higher status than plants and cells. So they all have the facility to hear, touch, taste, smell, feel, etc. In this way, they enjoy the world. But they have to go from one body to another. As they develop in the human form of life, one develops attraction towards various combinations and permutations of sensual enjoyment, and thus one's future is fixed up. So Krishna says, yeah, the subtle body, that it all depends on the state of the mind. You are what you think. That's almost literally true in the material sense. That yang yang bhavi swaram bhavam tyajante kalevaram tam tamai vaiti kauntaya sadatad bhava bhavita. What we think of at the time of death determines our future. What we think of at the time of death is highly influenced by what we think of throughout life. And according to what we think of at the time of death, we get another body. But, bimuharna nupashanti. Great fools cannot see this, Krishna says. So here, this statement, the so-called scientists of the modern age cannot see how the subtle body is working and carrying the soul from one body to another. They cannot see it. And therefore, they conclude with, and actually, if you think about it, it's an extraordinary measure of crass foolishness, especially coming from people who are advertised as being the most intelligent people. I can't see it, so it doesn't exist. There's no proof, therefore it doesn't exist. It's like closing your eyes and saying, you do not exist. I can't see you, therefore you do not exist. I can't see it, therefore it doesn't happen. No one can see it, therefore. So in this crassly foolish assumption, the assumption is there that anything that exists should be apparent to the senses of human beings, or deducible by their intelligence. This assumes most unintelligently that all phenomena are within the sensual and cerebral or noetic or intellectual perspective of human beings. But why should that be? Why should we presume that to be so? What is the basis of this assumption except crass arrogance and foolishness to think that everything that is, all that exists is within the realm of human sensual perception and intellectual speculation. So therefore Krishna says, vimuhana nupashyanti, they cannot see. They may be great scientists, but they cannot, so-called great scientists, but they cannot see how the soul is passing from body to body. But who can see? Someone can see. For something to exist, there should be someone who can perceive it. Krishna is the perceiver of everything. There's a semi-philosophical speculation that if a tree falls down in a forest, Srila Prabhupada notes this in one of his purports, if a tree falls down in a forest and no one is there to see it, does it really happen? No one saw it, no one was aware of it. Srila Prabhupada points out, Krishna saw it. Krishna sees everything. Krishna knows everything. So, Krishna is giving knowledge in Bhagavad Gita, and through that knowledge given by Krishna, we can see that which is not visible to the gross senses or deducible by the intelligence. That there is the subtle body connected with the gross body, and the soul incarcerated in a particular body is carried from one body to another as the air carries fragrance. It's subtle. It can't be seen. Fragrance in the air cannot be seen. It's difficult to quantify because it's subtle. But nevertheless, it happens. So, but due to our subtle body, we're carried from one body to another, from one gross body to another. Those who have the eye of knowledge, which means jnana chakshu, means shastra chakshu. Knowledge is from shastra. Knowledge, there are various means of acquiring knowledge, of which that which is heard from authorities, from shastra, shruti, that which is heard, that is the best form of knowledge, because other forms of knowledge are simply they're deduced from experiences which are like groping in the darkness of ignorance. To quote again for the third day in a row, that what is that? Jnanam yattad jnanino. I should learn this most properly. Jnanino yattad ajnanam yesham nashitam atmanaha tesham aditya vajjnanam prakashayati tatparam. When one gets actual knowledge, then everything becomes clear, just like the sun rising. And as long as one doesn't have that knowledge, then one's knowledge is the knowledge of one groping in ignorance. The Dr. Frog analogy is always applicable. It's an excellent analogy that Dr. Frog, within his well, may have appeared to be a highly learned and respectable person. He knows everything about how to catch flies in the well. He knows the whole geography of the well, how to go from one side to the other. He knows he's learned in all the arts of frog life, how to catch flies, how to jump on the back of a female frog and produce some more tadpoles. Well, first of all it becomes spawn, then tadpoles, and then frogs. So he's highly learned. Among the frogs, Dr. Frog is considered a venerable scholar. But after all, his knowledge is just of a tiny little well, which is of no significance whatsoever as far as we're concerned. As far as the frogs are concerned, the well is of great significance. As far as the humans are concerned, they don't care at all. The ants in their ant nest, as far as they're concerned, they've dedicated their whole life to tunneling holes in the earth, providing for the queen ant. They're completely dedicated to their nest. Human beings, what do they care about an ant's nest? They don't care at all. So this example is given here of Puranjan, his house being set on fire. What could the house is, or the city is It represents, figuratively represents his body. So we can imagine this is an extremely distressing experience for someone if their house burns down. People in the modern age, they don't have a fixed house. Nrisimhananda Prabhu, quick check, if you can run through your memory. How many houses have you lived in this lifetime? How many houses have you lived in this time, in this lifetime? Can't even think, so many. Countless. Many houses. I don't have a house. I'm not yet. I'm just moving from place to place. You can't even count them. You were in Badger for some time, was it? Or? No, you were in, you had some. Silla. Topango. Topango Canyon. What about yourself, Gyanaga? I mean, these are typical Americans of the modern age. Many, you see, they come. Six, seven, eight, nine. And traditionally, people would be born in one house, live in that house, and die in that house. But nowadays, people, they have so many houses, they're moving here and there. So for people who are born in a house, they've lived in that house their whole life, they don't know hardly what's beyond their own village, because there's no need to go anywhere else. If suddenly the house is attacked and destroyed, or there's an earthquake, it's an extremely distressing experience, because especially well, just like in India, the people, they have a small house, a little land, and no welfare state as in some of the Western countries. So it's like they're everything they know, everything they identify with, it's just suddenly destroyed. So it's extremely distressing. So like that, this example is given of the body, that if we identify with the body, then and we see the body is destroyed, the fire of death destroys the burning fever within. We know now the body is going to die. It's apart from the fear of not knowing what's going to happen next, but being pretty sure it's not going to be very nice. There's also the distress of being ripped away from everything that we identify with. That what gives us, we consider reality to be this existence. I am this body, this is my house, these are my relatives, and we cannot conceive of ourselves in any other way. And all of a sudden we're forcefully and violently ejected from that. So it's an extremely distressful experience, and the distress is exacerbated by the presence of the Yamadutas for most people. They not only do they have to leave everything that they identify with, but they're dragged away by extremely hostile, nasty people who definitely don't have any good intentions about how to deal with you. And that you're dragged away, you don't know where to, but you're sure it's not going to be very nice, and it isn't very nice. So this has been described in the previous canto, in the third canto of Srimad Bhagavatam. And the discussion is going on here in the fourth canto of the horrors. In the previous purport, Srila Prabhupada speaks of the pangs of birth, death, birth, old age, disease, and death. Horror. It's horrifying. And therefore, the materialistic people don't like to talk about it. But devotees, transcendentalists, they talk about it a lot. I was at a Buddhist monastery once in Thailand. These were hardcore Buddhists, not just official Buddhists, I mean really dedicated Buddhists. They're really into their Buddhism. So they had one exhibit in a glass case. It was a dead body, which is the dead body of a, looked like there was an old woman, and died obviously, otherwise wouldn't be dead. And I don't know, maybe they'd given some preservative or something, but it wasn't rotting. There was a bad smell pervading the whole room. And there was a dead body. And next to that, next to the picture of the, not the picture, the actual dead body, was a photo of the type that's very common throughout the world, and especially in Thailand, of a beautiful young woman. So you can compare the two. The beautiful young woman becomes the shriveled up, the beautiful young woman becomes the shriveled up old woman, and then the dead body. So it's literally a graphic exhibition of what happens to the body. And Buddhism, especially its basis, Buddhism, Jainism, and later the Shankaracharyas, Mayavad, they're all based on the facts of the misery of this material world. The misery, the temporality, and therefore the pointlessness, the suffering of material life, and therefore of the need to do something about it and get out of this situation, to escape from the cycle of birth and death. And Indian culture has been much influenced by that. Prior to that, the Mimamsakas enjoy life. Their philosophy was enjoy life. Don't just enjoy it now, but act in such a way that you can enjoy in future. They also accepted that there is birth and death, but they thought that, well, if we perform pious activities, we can enjoy in this life and we can enjoy in the next life too. So who cares about the suffering? Let's get on with the enjoyment. But then others, such as Buddha, Mahavira, and most influential Shankara, they pointed out that this life is miserable and horrible. And that has been that understanding has been largely influential in Indian culture since, for thousands of years. And even today, although the emphasis in Indian culture, in case you hadn't noticed, is very much on material enjoyment, but still there's that underlying understanding. It's not very far away from people's consciousness that actually everything here is temporary, we have to die, and therefore we see that even today in India there are so many sadhus. And sadhus, people who've left everything, of course it may be that they're just frustrated in their family life, they couldn't get their act together, or whatever. But they've taken to a life of renunciation, because concomitant with the understanding that material life is miserable, then the natural thing to do is then why endeavor anymore to try to enjoy this life when we can see that it's miserable. And even if you feel happy, then that happiness is going to come to a drastic, sudden, and painful end. But it's not an end. The sudden, drastic pain of death, you might think, well, then it's all over, okay, then you can relax. But you can't relax. People commit suicide because they want to get out of their present nasty situation. It's too much for them to tolerate. They say, let me get out of this situation. But it's really out of the frying pan and into the fire that by committing suicide, they might escape from one suffering situation, but they immediately go into another situation which is even worse suffering. So, renunciation, that's the obvious response. When one sees that material life is so miserable, then the obvious response is to want to renounce it. And this influence is still today strong in Indian culture. However, the Vaishnav culture is not simply stressing on the temporality and misery of material life. That is there, definitely. This is definitely right here, and we're discussing this in Srimad Bhagavatam. But Srimad Bhagavatam and the Vaishnavas, they offer knowledge of an existence which is far, far better than simply negation of material life, and far, far better than material life. As Srila Prabhupada often pointed out, the idea of simply getting liberated with no future activity, it's a suicide philosophy. It's just that one sees that everything in this world is miserable and therefore you want to escape it. It's like committing suicide. But those who do not have knowledge of the happiness of Krishna consciousness, they are inclined to either renounce this world to try to get free from it without any positive activity, or just to get on with enjoying this world, make the best of a bad bargain. Probably all of you who first, I had this experience, probably all of you did, when you first read the teachings of Lord Chaitanya, that Srila Prabhupada writes that Shankaracharya's, one of the purposes of his preaching was to increase the population and to make people more materialistic. And in the 7th chapter of Adi Lila, Srila Prabhupada writes that both the Kashi Mayavadis and the Sarna Voidists or Buddhists, they're both actually gross materialists. So these seem like very strange statements. How is that? How is it that the Mayavadis and the Buddhists are materialists, and how are they encouraging material life when they're stressing so much on renunciation of the world? The world is miserable. Well, I had a good realization of that when I was in Thailand, which is a staunchly Buddhist country, despite all the efforts of Christians and others to convert. They're staunchly Buddhist and hardcore Buddhist. I mean, within Buddhism there are various streams, but the Thai Buddhists pride themselves on being the real Buddhists. That means complete Shunyavad. There are schools of Buddhism in which they believe that you chant Om Mani Padme Hum and go to the beautiful land of Buddha, which is something like personal. Yeah, it's personal. But Thai Buddhists pride themselves on not accepting any belief in God, and ultimately you just become nothing, or you realize there is nothing, or whatever. It's difficult even to express what they believe because they don't believe in anything. They believe in nothing. Yeah, it's very difficult to even think of it, what it means. And that's the problem. That's why they're gross materialists. Because the ultimate goal which they are supposed, that Buddhism is supposed to offer, is, you can't understand what they're talking about anyway, And even if you do half understand it, the goal of becoming nothing is not very relishable, is it? And alright, well, material life is full of suffering. They accept that, theoretically. But as anyone who's been to Thailand or has even heard about it knows, Thailand is a land of sanuk, which means fun, enjoyment. That's the main purpose of life in Thailand. Everyone's interested in sanuk, how you can enjoy yourself. And there are so many beautiful young women. There are everywhere, more or less. There are beautiful young women all over the world, and even if they grow old, there are always more coming, right? So enjoy yourself. Beautiful young women, nice food. You can get live grasshoppers fried right in front of your eyes on the street, fresh and crispy, among other things to eat. Snakes, rats, and well, the main food is pigs, but they have varieties also. So I asked one woman once that, well, you're a Buddhist, right? And she happened to come to our temple. So I said, you're a Buddhist, right? And you accept that for your pig eating, it's highly likely you're going to become a pig in your next life. Doesn't that bother you? She said, no. I said, well, why not? And she said, well, that will also be sanuk. That will also be fun. Enjoy life. So, from this I could understand that the goal in Buddhism, or Mayavad, is so difficult to understand, so unattractive. I mean, who really wants to become nothing, or become like a light, the light coming out of a light bulb, merge into some light? Doesn't sound that attractive, does it? I mean, you have all kinds of things offered for pleasure, but we don't find that just, well, stand in some light for 3 days, and that can be your pleasure. Well, you're supposed to be in light forever if you achieve the perfection of Jyoti me lin ho jana. You become some light. It's not that attractive. It's not very attractive at all. So the goal of life is, you can't understand it, and even if you can half understand it, it's not attractive. And what do you have to do to achieve it? You have to do all these austerities over many, many lifetimes. Be cold and hard and dry, and as a result of that you become nothing. Who wants to do that? Better be a pig. That's what the woman thought. Eat pigs now, become a pig later. The pigs are also enjoying, they get fed well, they're good and fat, as Prabhupada pointed out. See, the pigs, they're enjoying. There's no rape law in pig society. You can just jump on any old pig, including your pigess, including your mother, and you can eat, you see, fresh food. In India, the pigs have a great time. In the villages, they get fresh hot food every morning with, you know, nice chili flavor, because the Indian people eat lots of chilies, and it's great, and they become fat, and life's wonderful. And it comes a time when someone kills you, but anyway, then you can take birth again and enjoy in another way. There are 8,400,000 species of life. You can enjoy in all of them. You ever thought what fun it would be to be a bird flying in the sky? What fun it would be to be a crow finding a dead rat in the street, ripping its intestines out? What fun! Life is wonderful, folks. Why are you wasting your time in this Hare Krishna movement? You can be a crow. You can be a rat. That would be fun, wouldn't it? Running around in the darkness with other rats. You can be a bat. How about that? Fly around in a dark cave with radar. Have your own built-in radar system. How about that? So, life is wonderful. And it's simply waste of time to try to get self-realized. Well, that's what some people say. But, actually, life is miserable in this material world. That's a fact. And we see that here in Bombay, in this prestigious institution called ISKCON, so many big, important people come here. And we see that for all their money and prestige, they're not any happier than anyone else. What do you think, Bajahari? You see big, important people all the time. They have more anxieties. They're always in anxiety. This idea of maintaining your prestige, it just causes them anxiety, that's all. And they suffer death in the same way as everyone else. They may be in the swankiest hospital in Bombay, but with a nice air conditioning, but the fire is burning inside. It doesn't matter, you can turn the air conditioning up full, but the fire burns the same. So one should be intelligent and see that material life is suffering. But it is unintelligent to come to the conclusion that because it's, first of all, it's unintelligent to think that material life is enjoyable. It's intelligent to understand that material life is simply suffering. Then there comes another level, Maya. Srila Prabhupada states, the last snare of Maya is having seen this material world as miserable, to think that I don't belong to this world, therefore I must be God. Fool, still a fool. Therefore, real intelligence means to hear Srimad Bhagavatam. Actually, intelligent people can hear Srimad Bhagavatam. Not everyone can hear it. There may be people who sit and listen, but they cannot understand it. Shunilena shunekam. Even though we hear, we don't hear. When Parikshit Maharaj heard Srimad Bhagavatam from Shukadev, others were there. They didn't hear. They heard, but they could not hear as Parikshit heard. Parikshit was the proper person to hear. Others were there, and they were hearing. But they didn't get the same result as Parikshit. Because he could hear. He was prepared to hear. Because from his very childhood, he had been trained in Krishna consciousness. Whereas others were attracted to various other hearers. They may be greatly learned persons, highly renounced persons, but they couldn't properly hear Srimad Bhagavatam. We see, even today in India, there are so many Bhagavad Katas or Ram Katas, which people come and hear, but they don't get the result that Parikshit got from hearing Srimad Bhagavatam. First of all, the speakers are not like Shukadev. But even if the speaker is Shukadev, not everyone will get the same result. Srila Prabhupada preached Krishna consciousness all over the world. Probably many thousands of people heard Srila, they had the opportunity to hear Srila Prabhupada and personally speak with him. Not everyone got the same result. Even some people came to Krishna consciousness and went away and became offensive to Srila Prabhupada. Not everyone got the same result. So, Narad Muni, he is speaking here. And Prachina Barhishat Maharaj ultimately gets the same result. In Bhagavatam, we have mostly success stories. Dhruv Maharaj, Ambarish Maharaj, Prahlad Maharaj, they're mostly stories of people who become successful. Even they may appear to be unsuccessful, but ultimately they become successful. Ajamil, he really blew it very, very badly. Spoiled his life very badly, but in the end, he was saved. So, if we can hear properly, if we can follow in the footsteps of great devotees, we can get the same result. as those great devotees. What is being described here, this result we're all going to get, that's for sure. For sure we're all going to get burned. Burned alive, burned from inside. That's for sure. That is unavoidable. It's going to happen to every single one of us. We have to be prepared for that by hearing regularly the matter, subject matter of Srimad Bhagavatam and taking it to heart. Pleasant music. Can play it at the time of death. Even up to the time of death, the desire for material enjoyment remains. That story is there of the emperor Akbar. He brought his Srila Prabhupada never mentioned the name of Birbal, but I guess it must have been that. Up until what time does the desire for material enjoyment continue? The question asked by the intelligent question asked by the intelligent emperor. Up to the time of death, came the reply. So the emperor didn't accept that. He thought, no, it can't be. Sometimes we think that, well, as I get older, then my material desires will automatically go away. But it doesn't happen. It's just not that by getting older one becomes spiritually advanced. So Birbal brought Akbar to see a dying man, and he told Akbar that you bring your beautiful young daughter, you come. So when the emperor was introduced, he was brought into the chamber of a man who was dying on his deathbed. Then the even though such a big important person had come, but the man's eyes went toward the beautiful daughter. He had no possibility to enjoy the beautiful daughter, but still he was attracted. It's a devastating message, because if we have attraction, Srila Prabhupada said, even for one sweet ball, then we have to come back again to this material world. Seems very difficult, doesn't it? So what should we do? We should all take sannyas. Yeah, but that's not a cure in itself. Changing the color of the cloth doesn't change one's inner desires. The only thing to do is to very strongly take shelter of Krishna's lotus feet. Krishna delivers his devotees. Tejam aham samudhartam mrityu samsara sagar bhavami nachirat partha. I deliver, Krishna says, my devotees. But we really have to be a devotee. That's for us. That's for our benefit. And then what about others? People don't have any information of this. They're not interested in this. Here we have in Bombay, here in Juhu, now there are four temples of ISKCON in Bombay, including Navi Mumbai. But what is the percentage of people who are coming and seriously practicing Krishna consciousness? It's very few. Many people come for darshan. That's for their benefit. But for most people, they'll come for darshan, then they'll go to the Ganesh temple for darshan. And the main darshan is in the movies. That's what they're most interested in. If we tell people you can come to the temple for darshan, they may not be so interested. If you tell them that they can get the darshan just living out the back of his Amitabh Bachchan, they'll be much more interested, isn't there? He's locked in there. No one can go inside. It's like a fortress. And here it's open. Please come. People are coming. But they're not so interested. If Amitabh, if he came, then so many people would come. Already Krishna's here. People are so unfortunate. So, while seeing our own plight, of being in Maya. We can be also cognizant of the fact that others are actually in a much worse situation than us, because they have no knowledge of or information of that process, this bhakti yoga process, by which people can be delivered from birth and death. Yasyam vaishuramananam krishne paramapurushe. What's the next line? Krishna paramapurushe upadyate pungsam vaishoka adivarnam shoka maya bhava payabhaha. That by regularly hearing the Srimad Bhagavatam, hearing about Krishna, yasyam vaishuyamananam krishna paramapurushaḥ, that we can be delivered from fear, illusion, and lamentation. So this is the process. We're on the right track. Even if it seems slow, it's a commonly asked question. Devotees ask, well, I've been chanting Hare Krishna for 10 years, 20 years, I still have material desires, so many material desires, what can I do? What can we do? Just keep on going. Just keep on going. There's nothing better to do than this. What is the alternative? Go back to material life? That's not an alternative. Even if we're going very slowly, at least we're going in the right direction. Hare Krishna. Any question, please? Although I'm supposed to be finished, but I'll indulge in overtime here. Questions? Hands are raised by three seniors, all with white hairs on their head, or in one case with not much hair at all. It's all right, it's not a subject of... We're all going that way. Hum sab mrityu ke pat par patik hai. Yeah. So? I couldn't... If the sweet is offered to Krishna, that's what Prabhupada said, isn't it? When Srila Prabhupada was asked, what if we have a desire at the time of death, even for a sweet, and Prabhupada said, offer it to Krishna. So that's the trick. We dovetailing, Srila Prabhupada called that. We have material desires, dovetail in them in the service of Krishna. You going to go to Golok Vrindavan and make movies of Krishna's leelas there? Hey, you're both in the film line. Send some movies back here. We're in the movie, yeah. Yeah, please.
I was amazed that these Buddhist people, although they offer many different things to their gurus and their monks, one of the things that they offer is the meat.
That's the Santi Asok. That was the, in their monastery was the dead body.
And they're actually kind of ostracized.
They're hardcore. Yeah, they're ostracized. They don't go along with the government monks. See, it's a tradition in Thailand that every young man has to become a monk before he gets married. And traditionally it was supposed to be some good period of time, a few years. Now it's reduced to 2 weeks, 1 week, 1 day. It's just like the Brahmins in India. They have to have their Upanayanam, their Brahmin thread ceremony before they get married. So many times they do it along with the marriage ceremony, just to save money. Instead of having two ceremonies, they have one. It's become a ritual. And if you go in these so-called monks' cabins, they have all pictures of naked women, and it's a fuss. Yeah, they're not spiritualists at all. This in most of the Buddhist countries, you'll find there's the traditional Buddhist countries. There's meat eating down to the. Traditionally, they didn't eat cows. That was good. But like I say, they'll eat grasshoppers, rats, snakes, dogs, all kinds of things. So it's said that Buddha died by eating truffles, which is the something derived from a pig's meat. And it's said, just like the tantrics in India, it's said that, well, you should accept anything given to you, including meat, with the idea that you're dispassionate, you see. You're not attached or detached from anything. You're neither attached to anything, nor are you repugnant of anything. So if someone gives you meat, then you shouldn't reject anything given. You should just take it. Like that. It's strange, to say the least. Yeah, the Santiyasok, they don't take, the Santiyasok monks don't take meat. And they only eat once a day. Yeah, should we make this the last question? Yeah. Yeah.
Where is Buddhist people are staying permanently and usually entering meditation? Those descriptions are there about the scholar.
Yeah.
It's only the Buddhist are there, where Buddha are transferred there. Just for information.
Yeah, yeah.
And that is a strict learning, must be available. A strict learning.
Yeah, yeah. Tibetan Buddhism. Dalai Lama is also a meat eater. Yeah, but it's tamasic. One thing we have to understand about Buddhism is that it came out of India. And it came out of the Vedic culture. So many of the concepts are just borrowed from the Vedic culture. To speak of nirvana, that word's right there in Bhagavad Gita. The idea of that birth, death, old age and material disease are miserable, this is not something made up by Buddha. Well, there are questions, but yeah, Nathaji wants to ask the questions. Whatever. It's the old folk show today. Any questions? Why did the whole of India become Buddhists and Mayavadis? Well, it's not that everyone did become. It's not everyone became a Buddhist. Why? Well, it's tamasic. Kali in Kali Yoga, tamagun is prominent. People are attracted to that which is. People are attracted to that which is against their own self-interest. One reason that people became attracted, a main reason, is because of Buddha and Shankara, who are both very powerful persons. Empowered persons, both of them. And generally we see within cultures that in spiritual terms or philosophical terms, they tend to go between extreme enjoyment, and then this pendulum swings to extreme renunciation, and then again to extreme enjoyment, and then so it goes back and forward. Vaishnavism is the perfect balance, because it doesn't, in Vaishnavism, neither gross in sense enjoyment nor extreme renunciation are recommended, neither of them. In Buddhism they talk of the middle path, but it's pretty extreme as far as the sense enjoyers are concerned. Okay. This should be. You didn't take sannyas yet. The living entity doesn't die. That's the whole point.
When he meets the gross body.
The gross body of the, yeah.
His subtle body carries him to his next gross body according to his desires. In the case of
according to his desires and what he deserves. It's not just according to his desires.
In the case of a devotee, when he is about to leave his body, is it his own mind-made intelligence that reminds him to remember Krishna, or Krishna himself reminds him?
May be different in different cases. If we're lucky, we'll have devotees chanting with us. But Krishna looks after his devotees. Even if the devotee forgets, Krishna will not forget him. Hare Krishna. We'll finish there. All glories to His Divine Grace, Srila Prabhupada. Hare Krishna.
Sure.